At Eton, they alighted on the roof of the upper school. On the opposite side of the schoolyard, the 52 stories of Lupton's Tower gleamed white in the sunshine. College on their left, and on their right, the school community singery reared their venerable piles of ferro-concrete and vitaglass. In the centre of the quadrangle stood the quaint old chrome-steel statue of R. Ford. Dr. Gaffney, the provost, and Miss Keat, the headmistress, received them as they stepped out of the plane.
"Do you have many twins here?"
the savage asked, rather apprehensively, as they set out on their tour of inspection.
"Oh, no," the provost answered. "Eton is reserved exclusively for upper-caste boys and girls. One egg, one adult. It makes education more difficult, of course, but as they'll be called upon to take responsibilities and deal with unexpected emergencies, it can't be helped."
He sighed. Bernard, meanwhile, had taken a strong fancy to Miss Keat. "If you're free any Monday, Wednesday or Friday evening," he was saying, jerking his thumb towards the savage. "He's curious, you know," Bernard added. "Quaint." Miss Keat smiled, and her smile was really charming, he thought, said thank you, would be delighted to come to one of his parties. The provost opened a door. 5 minutes in that Alpha Double Plus classroom left John a trifle bewildered.
"What is elementary relativity?"
he whispered to Bernard. Bernard tried to explain, then thought better of it, and suggested that they should go to some other classroom. From behind a door in the corridor leading to the Beta Minus geography room, a ringing soprano voice called,
"One, two, three, four,"
and then with a weary impatience,
"As you were." "Malthusian drill," explained the headmistress. "Most of our girls are Free Martins, of course. I'm a Free Martin myself."
She smiled at Bernard.
"But we have about 800 unsterilized ones who need constant drilling."
In the Beta Minus geography room, John learnt that a savage reservation is a place which, owing to unfavorable climatic or geological conditions or poverty of natural resources, had not been worth the expense of civilizing. A click, the room was darkened, and suddenly, on the screen above the master's head, there were the penitentes of Acoma prostrating themselves before Our Lady, and wailing, as John had heard them wail, confessing their sins before Jesus on the cross, before the eagle image of Pukong. The young Etonians fairly shouted with laughter. Still wailing, the penitentes rose to their feet, stripped off their upper garments, and with knotted whips began to beat themselves blow after blow. Redoubled, the laughter drowned even the amplified record of their groans.
"But why do they laugh?"
asked the savage in a pained bewilderment.
"Why?"
The provost turned towards him a still broadly grinning face.
"Why? Because it's so extraordinarily funny!"
In the cinematographic twilight, Bernard risked a gesture which, in the past, even total darkness would hardly have emboldened him to make. Strong in his new importance, he put his arm round the headmistress's waist. It yielded willowily. He was just about to snatch a kiss or two, and perhaps a gentle pinch, when the shutters clicked open again.
"Perhaps we had better go on,"
said Miss Keat, and moved towards the door.
"And this," said the provost a moment later, "is the hypnopedic control room."
Hundreds of synthetic music boxes, one for each dormitory, stood ranged in shelves round three sides of the room. Pigeonholed on the fourth were the paper soundtrack rolls on which the various hypnopedic lessons were printed.
"You slip the roll in here," explained Bernard, interrupting Dr. Gaffney. "Press down this switch."
"No, that one,"
corrected the provost, annoyed.
"That one, then. The roll unwinds. The selenium cells transform the light impulses into sound waves, and..."
"And there you are,"
Dr. Gaffney concluded.
"Do they read Shakespeare?"
asked the savage, as they walked on their way to the biochemical laboratories past the school library.
"Certainly not," said the headmistress, blushing.
"Our library," said Dr. Gaffney, "contains only books of reference. If our young people need distraction, they can get it at the Feelies. We don't encourage them to indulge in any solitary amusements."
5 busloads of boys and girls, singing or in a silent embracement, rolled past them over the vitrified highway.
"Just returned,"
explained Dr. Gaffney, while Bernard, whispering, made an appointment with the headmistress for that very evening.
"From the Slough Crematorium. Death conditioning begins at 18 months. Every tot spends 2 mornings a week in a hospital for the dying. All the best toys are kept there, and they get chocolate cream on death days. They learn to take dying as a matter of course."
"Like any other physiological process,"
put in the headmistress professionally. 8 o'clock at the Savoy. It was all arranged.